Rod's Pulse Podcast number 77, interview, media site by Sonic Foundry and Podsafe 4-Piece.
This is Rod's Pulse Podcast, the podcast for faculty and students interested in learning how to use and create podcasts and other e-learning technologies. Welcome back. Getting to be that time of year again. I thought I'd play a little holiday selection. So I think you'll enjoy it. Stay tuned at the end of my podcast for If Every Day Were Christmas. It's by a group that was assembled just for this song called Pod Safer Peace. And if you buy the song for 99 cents, all the proceeds go to UNICEF. So happy holidays, everyone. Before I continue with my main topic today, I just wanted to bring to your attention a couple of my picks from the Podosphere, and you can find all of these on my Podcaster Guide and e-learning news. So podcasting has made it into the Oxford English Dictionary, along with podcaster, podcast, and the adjective podcasted, which, to be honest, I haven't heard being used yet. I want to bring to your attention an interesting piece of software I discovered called AudioGo. That's O-D-I-O-G-O. It's a media shifting technology, which is a fancy term for saying that it takes text, such as you would find in a RSS feed, and turns it into nearly human quality audio file. So you can turn a blog into a podcast. It sounded intriguing, so I went to their website and played a sample, and I'll play that for you here. See what you think.
AudioGo is the first service of its kind that downloads your favorite blogs into your iPod, even if those blogs don't actually have a podcast. This has to be the easiest way for bloggers to become podcasters without lifting a finger.
It does seem pretty real. I don't know if I would want to listen to a very long podcast that way, but it's some of the best voice synthesis I've heard. And for my last pick today, I just wanted to mention an article that I saw called Short and Sweet, Technology Shrinks the Lecture. Now, I've sort of known for a while now that I like to keep my podcast short. About 20 minutes seems to be the optimum length. What this article points out is that traditional class period lasts about an hour, so professors design their lectures to be that long, but it may be too long. I think if you've been a student lately, you may agree with me. So the trend is now with technology to shrink the lecture, to have more bite-sized pieces. It's especially convenient in online learning, distance learning. The article goes on to say that several faculty now are breaking their lectures up into much smaller bite-sized pieces. I think it's a good idea. I think we should rethink the idea of a 50-minute lecture. That's a good lead-in to my main topic today. It's an interview with John Pillard, who's the technical product manager for Sonic Foundry. I say that because Sonic Foundry was mentioned in that short and sweet article that I just recalled. So without further ado, let me introduce John and play the interview. We talk about MediaSite, which is their class capture system. I'm very lucky to have John Pillard here. He's the technical product manager at Sonic Foundry. And for those of you in my audience that aren't familiar with Sonic Foundry, one of their main products is MediaSite class capture software. So welcome, John. I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about your company and how you got involved with Sonic Foundry and a little bit about MediaSite.
First of all, I'm very happy to be here. And I'd be happy to tell you a little bit about Sonic Foundry. We were started in 1991, primarily as a multimedia software company. In the early days, it was focused around audio. Some of you may be familiar with Acid and things like that. Later on, developed Vegas Video. You may be familiar with some of those tools, consumer-focused. And then we sold those off in 2003 to Sony. And shifted our focus on webcasting technology for educational and business institutions, both here in the U.S. and all over the world. And that main product is, of course, MediaSight. And what MediaSight allows people to do, or presenters to do, is to bring together a variety of media. Some call it rich media, which means, you know, synchronizing video with other images. They could be slides. They could be other types of ancillary graphical material, all into one nice online webcast experience, and allow some basic interaction with remote viewers, some question and answer, some polling, and this can happen live or on demand. At Sonic Foundry, we also have an events services group, and that sort of sprung out of ongoing partnerships we had with large conferences where we were capturing and publishing their events online. So we ended up getting a lot of demand in that area, so we turn that into a business unit as well. So we use our own technology as a part of our business, and then we develop that technology for the educational and business markets.
Most of my audience is in the higher education area, mm-hmm. and in fact, at Thomas Jefferson University, we used, I guess, a competitor's product, although I don't think it was as full-featured as yours. From what I understand, yours can be used both for a synchronous presentation of a lecture and as well as archiving that for later use. Is that correct?
That's correct. It is one of the differentiators out there, that is a tool that you can use for both live and on-demand playback. In fact, you know, as soon as you get done with a live presentation, it can be automatically, immediately available in an online catalog for other viewers to take part in that.
Just for those in my audience who may not understand this genre of software, let me sort of give a brief view of what I think it does, and then you tell me if I'm wrong or not.
Sure.
The student would be viewing, obviously, I guess, whatever is on the instructor's machine, hear the instructor's voice, and I guess it would be optional whether they would actually see a video, you know, sort of a headshot of the instructor. Is that correct?
Well, it is correct. I mean, we find a lot of our customers it's rich media usually includes the video. So we find the best experience is where you can see the instructor talking, and then you have high resolution graphics next to them. So, you know, even in your field of pharmacology, you know, you can imagine when you're looking at the drugs, how it's interacting with the body. You might have an image at the cell level, and you want to have high-resolution graphics. We sort of pride ourselves on being able to give an excellent, high-quality capture of those graphics. Meanwhile, while the instructor is also visible, so you can see those innuendos, you can see those hand motions and things like that. And, you know, the research shows that being able to see that does improve the retaining of the knowledge.
And I assume there's a way, if you're looking at this, you know, after the fact, that you can navigate through it. There's some sort of a timeline or snapshots that you can navigate through and pick out
exactly
the area of lecture.
We take a slightly different approach than some of the other players out in this area. We're capturing images, and so we create thumbnails, and so you can navigate in a variety of methods. If the instructor or the professor decided to chapter a presentation, they could do that. They could navigate that way. Students can navigate per image if they want to. They can move the slider on the video, sort of the standard, sort of old school way, if you will. But yeah, there's a variety of mechanisms for the student to move around the presentation to find exactly what they're looking for.
I guess one question I have more on the technical side then is, what's involved in terms of hardware? Is it an appliance that you provide for each classroom, or does it use the school's hardware? Is there special software needed on the viewing end? How does that work?
All great questions. One of our philosophies is not to change the way the presenter presents. So we don't want to have the presenter install anything on their computer, and that also frees us up to enable events. If you had guest speakers or lecturers coming in, you just want to basically take that VGA or that DVI out from their computer or their microscope or whatever it is they're using as a presentation source and just take that out, and that's why we have an appliance. So to answer your question, we have an appliance that's in each room, and that is our appliance. We've built that from the ground up, so it's our hardware and it's our software. We control that, and that allows us to maintain the reliability that our customers are looking for. We have some customers that have, you know, been capturing lectures for years and years, and they'll tell us they've never mixed the lecture. And part of that is because we own that encoding software. We own the hardware structure, so we know how to ensure that that doesn't get messed up, if you will, which is what happens when people are using computers that are, you know, used also for other purposes and that sort of thing. It causes some problems with support and reliability. So there's the encoder in a room, or the recorder, I should say, and then there is a server that actually serves up the content, whether it's live, it would stream it from a server, or on demand, that houses the archived presentations.
Now, would that server be located at the school, or would that be a service that you would provide?
Great question. Actually, many of our customers have on-premise solutions, so they have the server on-site, but we also do offer a hosting solution that where we have over 250 customers that actually use us for hosting their content. To simplify things a little bit, you know, sometimes if it's a department within a university and they decide, you know what, we just want to go live and we want to make this happen quickly, so they'll get, you know, 1, 3, 5 recorders and then connect to our data center, and then we just host it here for them.
Being a member of an IT organization, I was always happy to outsource wherever possible, not have to worry about, you know, the care and feeding of yet another server on campus.
Some schools have, where the IT people, they want to own everything, and others are like more like you, like, well, hey, let's, you know, play to our strengths, and we'll take care of what needs to be taken care of here, but if we don't have to mess with it, well, maybe we should outsource it.
Is there any drawback in having you host the server? I'm just thinking in terms of, you know, the reliability of the institution's network. Is there any sort of buffering that happens, you know, temporary storage in the appliance, or is that a drawback in some cases?
Well, we encode on the fly, so it's all being coded at the appliance. And so even if you're streaming live, of course there's going to be some buffer because that's just what happens with live streaming. There is some degree of buffer, but what we find that most people are using it for your everyday lecture capture, fewer are using it for actually live than they are for the on-demand playback. In fact, you have a medical history. You know, some of our medical schools, these med students will get out of their lecture, and it might have been a four-hour lecture. They'll go back to their dorms or their, you know, apartments or whatever, and they will immediately begin creating their study guides based on the recording from the day's lecture. And that's part of how they study. I don't think that there's any big drawback. I think it's just that, you know, there's always going to be various issues, whether it's firewalls, network, and, you know, your standard players in a streaming media situation. But I wouldn't say that there's any overall benefit or weakness of that, I should say.
I know there are other vendors that have their own appliances, others that can use the institution's servers, and there's some that are even totally web-based. How else would you distinguish your product from some of your competition?
Like I said, we don't install anything on the instructor's computer. So that's, you know, one differentiation. That's one approach. It's a different approach than some others who may have a software-based approach. And we feel that is going to be the best way to get a lot of information out there quickly, simplifies things. It allows the instructor to focus on what they want to focus on, which is teaching, not have to mess around with the technology at all. In fact, to the point where they don't even have to touch a button if they want. We can automate the whole thing, schedule the whole thing. So that's one difference in the approach. Another difference in the approach is, like I said, we encode on the fly. We don't store large raw files locally that need to be moved around on the networks. They need to be uploaded and transcoded, because one of our tenants is also, like I was giving you that example of those medical students, they want that content available to them immediately upon leaving the room. So with us, you know, that content is up on the server ready to be played for an on-demand playback, you know, within 4 or 5 minutes. With some other solutions, you might have to wait till the end of the day, depending on what the load of that room is, network availability, things like that. So we think that's a differentiator. Also, just in terms of, and I mentioned this before, one of our tenants is also never miss a capture. So it's harder to have that tenant if you are using software-based, if you're introducing human aspects to it, if you are allowing the customer to do a lot of their own, let's say, building in the machines and using different encoders. Like I said, we own the encoder, we own the box that we're recording on, so that allows us to maintain the reliability that we're talking about. Some of the other solutions might take a different approach. They'll use a number of different solutions and just point to those encoders, which, hey, that may be fine for you. It's not our approach. And we feel like the reliability that we have in our customer base has proven that to be a really solid approach.
One thing you mentioned, which is attractive to me, is the ability to schedule the recordings automatically. Is that done through your own interface, or is it possible to interface your product with the learning management system or the student information system that might have that schedule information?
We have an interface to schedule in our system, and one of the things that we're actively looking at is, okay, well, first of all, there's, you know, a million different student information systems, so the question is, how do you get that into our system? But that is actually something that we're working on right now to make sure that we can help out people who want to just, you know, port that over to our system to automate that process a little better. So it's one of the things we're actively looking at right now.
How about integrating with a learning management system for, you know, for the students' ease of use to get to your content? Do you interface with Blackboard or Angel or some of the others?
Yeah, great question. We do have a building block for Blackboard, and what that does allow to happen, just like with many of the other solutions, it does allow the automatic publishing of the content to a course that is determined by the school. One of the nice things that we've done with our most recent building block is that we're able to actually report on the students who are viewing it, even if they're not a MediaSite user. Let's say you're a Blackboard user. We can see who they are and offer a nice array of reporting that you wouldn't be able to get through Blackboard itself, for example. So if you're interested in accountability and seeing how your content is being used, who's watching what, when, that's one of the nice things about the building block. It also allows, like you said, you know, one of the benefits of that integration is not having to have people log in again, but you still want to make sure that that content is secure. We take security very seriously, and so somebody copied that link out of Blackboard and passed it on to somebody else, it's not going to work outside of the Blackboard environment.
Yeah, that's certainly important. One of the more advanced features I've heard about, I couldn't tell you which product offers it, is ability for the student to somehow annotate the lecture content once when they're viewing it. Do you have something like that, or can you talk about other advanced features that
apart? That's interesting. We are talking to our customers all the time about that. In fact, I was just out talking to a school and asking them about the ability to annotate, and we haven't yet found that to be something that they wanted to do inside of MediaSite. What we found is a lot of them were taking notes in other. We found a lot of them were still taking notes in on paper, believe it or not. But then others were taking notes in Word or those things. So we're actively talking to our user base all the time and trying to look at ways that we can improve their experience. But in terms of those notes, we haven't yet come to the point where we feel like that's something that we can offer. If you want to talk about advanced features, some of the things we can do in terms of the playback in the high resolution, you know, we can give you graphics that are 1600 by 1200. We can move high motion. So if the presenter puts a full motion video into their PowerPoint, for example, we can shift that over to our video window so they still get the full motion, because the way we approach things is we feel like getting a high resolution image capture is important, and sometimes more so than, say, having complete fluid motion in that content window all the time.
One thing I happened to notice when I was looking at your website is you have that a magnifier built into the window. I thought that was pretty clever. I could see you know, a faculty person demonstrating a, you know, a histological slide or something, and then being able to have the students sort of zoom in might be a nice feature.
Well, and you're getting down to the nitty-gritty, which is great, but, you know, that's something actually that on the student side is great, because they can get to the native resolution of that graphic without blowing it to full screen, and that allows them to sort of keep that rich media experience depending on what the size of their their screen is that they're playing it back on, and get that detail that they're looking for. And in fact, that's, you know, something that we're looking to do as we look forward. Everybody's talking, and you yourself, you're Mr. Podcast, right? So you're looking at, well, you know, how do you take the rich media experience onto smaller devices and into portable locations? And our approach has not been to embrace sort of the video approach, just put it out in video format, but we're looking at how do we do this in a way where we can enable that rich media navigation so they can get the thumbnails, they can move around, they can zoom into a graphic, they can do the picture-in-picture, they can have some control over it. So that's sort of where we see things going in terms of putting that on your smaller devices, you know, like your iPod or your smartphone. And, you know, one of the things we did earlier in the year was we embraced Silverlight as one of our technologies to assist us in doing cross-platform playback. And, you know, that same Silverlight sort of technology is going to allow us to do some pretty cool things on phones, on iPods, if you will, going forward in the future. You know, Nokia announced a while back that they would be supporting Silverlight on their handsets, and that's 150 million phones out there. Is it ready today? No. And it does the iPod or the iPhone, does that enable Silverlight right now? No, not yet. I think part of this is, you know, the chicken and the egg. We're waiting. You got some of the technology is ready, some of it isn't. You know, what about bandwidth and things like that? But I think we see things happening and moving in that direction that we're going to be able to offer a pretty cool user experience when the handset providers sort of catch up, if you will.
You certainly anticipated some of my questions. I know you do make available the audio podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, for example, you're not supporting the enhanced podcast that's proprietary to the video iPods?
Right.
Okay.
Right. And like I said, we have choices to make about where we want to spend our time. And while that is nice for some things, the problem is that sort of defeats one of our tenets, which is don't change the way the presenter presents. You know, up until now, you know, with the newer iPods, the screen size is a little bit bigger, right? But it's still at a level where if you get your standard professor who fills that slide with bullets or what have you, it's going to be a little bit hard to use. And in a lot of our research with our students, we're finding that, yes, some would like to have more portability. They might like that. But most of our students are watching on their laptops or on a computer.
Right, right. That's what I tell people about podcasts, too, that data that I've seen shows that about 60% of podcast subscribers actually listen right from their desktop, so they don't even move it to a portable device. On the other hand, I often quote a study that I mentioned that showed that of the portable formats, even when video was available, that students in this particular study preferred the audio only because that meant that they could review content, you know, while they're exercising or traveling and so on.
That is interesting, and I'm not saying that there's not a place for it. And like we do offer the audio podcast, so you know people are using it and they're very happy with it. The challenge is where do you spend your time in putting this forth? And we're focused more on offering that true, full, rich media experience and being ready for that when the devices are there. And you know, you bring up an interesting point too, which is, you know, we've talked to a lot of different groups, a lot of different student groups, and depending on who you're talking to, you get a completely different answer. If you're talking to a medical student, you know, they have one set of things that they're interested in. If you're talking to the undergraduate student who's just trying to get through their basic courses, they have a completely different set of needs. And then there's those MBA students who are, you know, the executive MBA programs that they don't have time for this, that, or the other thing. So it's a tough challenge to meet the needs of all these different end users.
John, we're almost at the end of our time. I do have one more question. You mentioned that you do have support for synchronous use. I wonder, do many of your clients or your customers use MediaSite for strictly online courses?
That's a great question. We have customers that are using it for all aspects, blended learning, pure online courses, just as an additional tool, as a study aid for, you know, your everyday lecture. So, yeah, we have up across the board.
Listen, thank you very much for talking to me today. I enjoyed our discussion, and I'll certainly have a link to the Sonic Foundry website in my show notes. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed my interview today, and I hope you have a great holiday. So stay tuned and listen to If Every Day Were Christmas by Podsafe for Peace. Have a great holiday.
Please leave odd feedback at 610-616-2199.
First winter snow outside my window. Feels like that time again to me.
The mistletoe, a Christmas show, and the lighting of that famous Christmas tree, yeah.
People are shopping for their loved ones and making plans for a Christmas feast. But it all goes by in the blink of an eye,
and then we have to wait another year.
Everybody's nice and full of light, and they give to those who are in need.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Please don't forget to leave Rod feedback. You can go to www.rodspulsepodcast.com and leave comments on his blog. You can send feedback to his email address, rod@rodspulsepodcast.com. You can also send audio feedback by calling into his comment line at 610-616-2199. Till next time, have a great week.
The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Merry, and does not represent the official viewpoint of Thomas Jefferson University, or any other institution or company.